Awesome.
Okay. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome, everyone. Very special welcome to all my new listeners around the world. Thank you for tuning in. It's Friday, the 23rd of August here in New Zealand. It's bloody cold, but boy, we have one hell of a guest who's going to be joining me today to warm us all up. Thank you so very much for tuning in. It's truly a privilege to be sitting next to each and every one of you today. My name is Nick Roud. I am your host, and you're listening to the Nick Roud podcast. So, team, I want to introduce to you someone very special to me. He's joining us all the way from the USA today. I want to give you a bit of a background on my guest before he comes on and joins us. He's the number one executive leadership coach in the world, an authority on coaching. In 2015, 16, 17, 18, and most recently in 2019, named top three leadership coaches by Global Gurus. He continues to win numerous awards for his work. He's coached many talented global CEOs, including the late Steve Jobs, and continues to break all boundaries when we're talking about coaching. My guest is proud author of 9 books, including 3 bestsellers, and his latest book, which I've asked him to join me today, which will be out on the 15th of October, is titled The Intelligent Leader, Unlocking 7 Secrets to Leading Others and Leaving a Legacy. Whilst he's a wonderful man, a wonderful coach, he's married to Gail for, I think, over just 40 odd years. They've got 4 adult children. A few of them work in the business and a few grandkids who I know he's exceptionally proud of. My personal view on today's guest is he's the absolute best around. He's at the pinnacle of his chosen path. He continues to push the rules, the boundaries, and this is why he continues to receive praise and awards from all corners of the globe. It gives me great pleasure to welcome back onto the Nick Roud podcast, Mr. John Matone. What an absolute privilege to welcome you back onto the show, John.
Nick, thank you so, so much. What a beautiful introduction. You so much touched my heart. You always do. And what a great honor it is for me to be here with your community of listeners and participants and clients and friends. Thank you so, so much, Nick.
Well, wonderful. I said to you before we press live, apart from waking up at 3:30 in the morning with the worrying sound of the rain on the roof and worrying about how my global shipping container is going to manage this conversation with you and I and whether we had to postpone a game. But no, it's great to have time with you, and I'm really privileged to have that time with someone like yourself. And I'm not going to blow smoke up your wherever, but you know what you're doing in the States and around the world. If anything I can do to put it out there to people who are close to me here in New Zealand and around the world, it's the least I can do. And you know,
thank you.
Sometimes you've just got to get behind things when you believe in it so much, and when you're seeing the results and you know what somebody's trying to do and the reason why, you know, words can't really be written into that kind of fact. But more importantly, we spoke a little bit, but how's the family? How's everyone at home?
Everybody's doing great. Everybody is doing fantastic. Very, very busy with life. My wife is a registered nurse, and she loves the work that she does. She works with the younger people and at the University of Central Florida. And then our 4 kids are each one's doing fantastic in their lives, and we're blessed, Nick. We're blessed.
It's great, you know, having close people around you at any stage in life, especially when you're putting out a book and all the time and effort that goes into that, and we'll come through that in our conversation. But just to have that support around is we all need it and we all deserve it, don't we? And everyone needs Absolutely. A cuddle every now and again. But last time we spoke, or last time I had you on the podcast, I think it was earlier in January, and I got some really good feedback from people and clients and you know, just saying thank you for putting out a good bit of content around the podcast. You were about to jump on stage. I think he was up in Dublin in Ireland and going on the Pendulum Leadership event.
It was.
Or whatever
right.
It was. To many, many thousands of great leaders. But so I'm really keen to understand. Tell me, how have you managed to squeeze time into everything that you do, put pen to paper and finish your latest book, The Intelligent Leader? How have you done it? What's the secret, man?
It's just getting up early, Nick. Honestly, it really is. You know, it does pay dividends. You know, it's funny. The first big book I wrote years ago, I was challenged then. You know, I had a lot of things going on. in my professional life and obviously my personal life. And I said to myself, how am I going to write this book? I don't have any time. And it dawned on me that I should just go to bed earlier and just get up earlier. And sure enough, I started writing at 3:30 in the morning every single day, every single day. And you know, by 5:30 in the morning, I had a volume, you know, of work. And I've continued that discipline.
On this book?
In my writing, yeah. Mm. Now, writing it doesn't come easy to me. Mm. It's the hardest thing that I can do. I don't really love it, to be honest with you.
Well, that's a surprise after reading it. Because when my guests or when my listeners get hold of the book in their hands, I'll be surprised if that's the feedback they share with me on that. But carry on, sorry.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say that this book was a little bit different because I think I started to really embrace a lot of the principles that I try to share with the world. And as a result of that, I really went very deep inside. And when I really went deep inside, I connected with my heart. And I found that the writing became a lot easier. And so I actually enjoyed this project more than any other previous project.
Oh, fabulous.
Yeah.
Isn't that good? When you do it from the heart, when you do things from the heart, it just comes easy. You're not forcing it. You're not faking it. It just spills out. And we'll come on to that later in our conversation today.
But I can't wait.
I think that's absolutely really neat that you can go deep. People can go deep and they can put some really good meaning behind that. But it was, you mentioned writing, and someone who's dyslexic myself, and I've shared with you many times around the effort that goes into reading and or putting words down on paper. It's extremely hard. And I know you've mentioned, and we'll talk about it later, an audio version, which will be coming out later, but we'll talk about it in a bit. That's wonderful. But I was listening to a podcast yesterday, and don't get me wrong, I do some work, John, but I was listening to Eric Schmidt, the former CEO of Google, and he was talking about the power of books and the power of podcasting. And there was a stat that he came out with, and he said, look, it's really interesting to hear that readers of books today are also very keen listeners to podcasts. And when I said to you, when I phoned you and said, come on the podcast, I want to talk about your book early in the year, I had 20,000 downloads of my podcast over the last couple of sessions, whatever they're called. So it's wonderful to hear someone like Eric saying the power of podcasts and the power of books, because I think the two do go hand in hand. And you and I spoke before we press record about, sure, you know, how many people are reading long form versions of books, how many people are listening to long form podcasts. And I suppose, in my humble view, that's the audience you're trying to reach, those that really want to get deep and understand a little bit more, whether that's 140 pages, whether that's 6,000 pages. But I just thought that was an interesting stat. So hopefully on the back of what you and I are putting out today, and when it goes out in a few days' time, we can spread the message and spread what words and wisdom you're sharing with people, and we can help everyone. So that's my main goal for this. There's nothing other than that. But
beautiful, Nick. Beautiful.
It's a gutsy move to put pen to paper, I feel, and to lay all your thoughts out as you've done and to go deep. But I suppose as we open up the chat today, why did you choose to write this book, John?
You know, Nick, this book has been evolving in my head for many, many years. I would say, you know, if I were to look back on my previous books, I consider them, you know, they were good books, Nick. They were very well received. Each of them made a bestseller list. And I was able to get my point of view out to the world. Mm. So those books did achieve a purpose. However, my background, my educational background, is industrial psychology. So when you think about the discipline of an industrial psychologist, where there's a lot of measurement and quantitative, very mechanical, I really wrote my books in that way, very research-oriented, you know, kind of mechanical, kind of boring in many respects. In particular, I think my talent leadership book, again, very well received. As I've gotten deeper and deeper and I'm 62. I don't know if your audience knows that, but you know, I continue to evolve as a human being. I think, you know, for me, I almost feel like I'm just starting out in life. I wake up every single day and I pinch myself. I take nothing for granted. I can't believe all the incredible things that have happened to me. The incredible people who are surrounded in my life, you know, my wife, principally, my kids, my family, and so on, so friends, and my coaches. You know, look at you, the incredible work and the leader that you are. Fantastic. I would say that as I've evolved as a human being and I've grown and matured, I've learned to go deeper, if you will, into my soul. And as I started to go deeper into my soul, I discovered deep that there were parts of me that were not getting out. And maybe it was getting out in my coaching, maybe it was getting out in my speaking, but I don't think it was spilling into my writing. I think my writing was more contained, if you will. And so I just started writing The Intelligent Leader. And I got more in touch with my soul, my heart. And lo and behold, Nick, I think I actually learned how to write a little bit better.
Well done.
Thank you.
If you're not improving, that's
probably the best description of it.
If you're not improving, John, you're not really doing great things, are you? You've said it all along. And to hear that around somebody who's got 9-odd books out, has spoken around the world at various events, and you know, you can jump online and see how much energy you put into your speeches and how much passion goes through the audience when you're sitting there talking at the Pendulum at Wobie or wherever around the world. You know, you're probably coming off that stage absolutely dripping wet from a physical point of view. You've probably done a marathon or an Ironman event or whatever. But
it's true.
How do you therefore capture that as an individual and that essence and that passion and that belief in what you do, and you put it into words? You know, there isn't a book, there's not a book that can visually be read, or I don't know if that's the right terminology, but people read words, it's black and white, it's dull. You know, to me, someone who's dyslexic, I want colour, I want to see colour, I want to see things come to life, I want to hear it and I want to taste it. But that's just my side of things. Other people love reading black and white, and well done for getting a book out there with all the things you're doing around traveling around the world.
It is a challenge. No question about it.
So listeners, the art to writing is get up at 3:30 a.m. and put pen to paper. John, if you'd mentioned it, I would have sent Louis on a plane, our 3-year-old. He would have been on a plane to you because he regularly gets up at 3:30, mate. And he would have been able to be your alarm clock.
Yeah, he can be a great writer. You gotta, you know, it's there's an athletic mindset. It's interesting you just brought up the physical part of it. I very much, when I speak, consider it less a mental exercise, Nick.
Yep.
It's less mental, meaning that, yes, I'm prepared, but I'm never rehearsed, ever. I feel the audience. I feel them. I see it in their eyes, in their facial expressions, and I'm overcome. I think I'm a high achiever, literally. You know, I was that's just the way I was brought up. I'm a very high achiever. I don't ever want to let anybody down. So I just put it out there. And I know not everybody, you know, you're never going to have 100% of the people loving what you've got to say. But, you know, I consider speaking very much a physical, athletic experience. I am soaking wet at the end, soaking wet, and I know that I've done my job.
You've given it all,
you know.
Yeah. But then to put that into words and put that in that book. So when that person's sitting in bed on their Kindle, on their in their paper version, or in their headphones, and they're listening to or reading the pages, that's when you know you've captured the audience. I suppose it'd be wonderful in a few months once the book finally gets released in October through various channels, through Amazon and is it Blake and Noble?
Amazon,
Barnes and Noble,
and Barnes and Noble.
Yeah, when it comes out, it'd be great just to hear if you get feedback on what people are seeing and reading, because you know, hell, you've captured me on this book, and I want to be really transparent with people. You sent me the book many months ago as a draft and said, look, here you go, Dyslexic Nick, work your way through this one, mate. And we're on to know. But I don't often read books more than once. It's just the way my brain goes. But I've read this three times. You know, you've got me. I've read it three times, and congratulations. I think the only time I've read a book more than once is Harry McClary from Donaldson's Dairy for my 3-year-old and 1-year-old every night. But, you know, this is a real game changer, and it's going to help so many people around the world, John. And I'd love to understand a few things from you, if that's okay, as we talk about the book.
Love
and
to.
If I cross the line, you know me, you can just put it back on me. But let's get into it. What was your inspiration for the book, do you feel?
I felt like I was doing good work. You know, I've never really thought about the growth of the quote-unquote brand, Nick. And you and I have talked about this.
Yep.
We talk often about this stuff. And I didn't have any vision that, you know, I would sort of arrive at the kind of recognition humbly that I've received. I didn't, when I relaunched my business 7.5 years ago, all I wanted to do was make a difference.
Mm.
And I did have big dreams. I did, but I was not really concrete about, you know, where this journey could take me. And I think as I, you know, and even with the notable coaching assignments, like working with Steve Jobs, all of that's contributed, you know, to the essence of who I am.
Mm.
I really believe that, and what I believe that I can bring to the world to make a difference for others, you know. So Steve Jobs contributed tremendously to the essence of who I am. But so did Roger Enrico.
Mm.
And Roger Enrico, I would say actually both of those coaching assignments were in many respects lucky, you know. That's one side of me, but there's another side of me said maybe it was just predestiny too, you know. I don't know, and actually I don't even care.
Mm.
But every human being that I've got an opportunity to talk with and meet with, and they don't need to be a CEO of a company, I feel like I've learned to become very open to perspective from every human being who walks the earth. And oh, by the way, if we just open up, if we just literally have the courage to open up to the human beings, the gifted people around us, most of whom are not CEOs, right?
Right.
These are people that can enrich our lives. Mm. I've learned so much, and it really dawned on me back in, I'd say, 2016 when I wrote Cultural Transformations, that, yeah, you know something, I was doing pretty good work, but I could do better. I recognized that I hadn't really gone very, very deep into my soul. Maybe I did my speaking, maybe more in my one-on-one coaching, because I show that, you know, when I do my one-on-one work. But I don't think I was doing it in my writing. And so as I've evolved, I think the inspiration was I just hit the cross line where I said, there's no way that I can truly become the best coach that I can be in the work that you and I do, right, unless I solve this dilemma. I really looked at it as a dilemma, and I took it on. I said, you know something? There's more. There's much more I can give to the world. And as a result, I think we've got a very special book. How do I say that? The reactions that we're getting so far. But I think the fact that it was such an enriching journey, Nick, to write the book,
personally.
I literally perspired, just like I did when I, you know what I'm saying? That was the measure.
That's the measure.
So when I wrote, when I perspired, I said, this is a physical performance where I'm going deep into my heart. I had never experienced that with my previous books.
So that really carries on to your purpose behind the book, do you feel? You know,
Absolutely.
If you're looking back now, you would have been writing for the last year, couple of years, 61 years, we'll get into it. But, you know, is there a purpose for the book? And is it, as you say, it's just to improve myself as an individual when it comes to writing, but it is also to leave my thought on the world. Is that your purpose for this, or is there another message that you want to kind of put out there?
I think a lot of people up until this point have sort of looked at me as a coach to organizations, a consultant to senior executive teams, right? Yet I look at the leadership gap in the world and the young people who are so talented all over the world who need help becoming the best that they can be and what we can do to unleash them. So the book is intended for it's certainly a much wider audience than my previous books. I think this book can be read by anybody. Even a high school student, I believe, could read this book and get one piece of perspective that could literally change their life. And if you look at my previous books, I don't think we could say that, Nick, you know? So this one was more about helping people all over the world, regardless of who they are and what their pursuit is in their life, breakthrough to become the best leaders, the best people, the best parent, the best student that they can be.
And that's a wonderful way of articulating what the message, because you know you see the title and you'll probably walk to a bookshop or online and you'll go to a business section, you'll go to business leadership or growth or mindset, whatever the title may be or wherever the chapter may lie. But I wanted to ask, you know, if you had anyone in mind when you're writing the book. And I've spoken to other people that have written recently. I had a guy in here a few days ago. He's written 3 books. He's traveled through Afghanistan. He's done some amazing things as a human. Yeah. And he and I were just talking. You know, that's what we do. You know, our job, we just sit there and talk and we get there. But you know, he was saying whenever he writes book, he only writes for himself to start off with. And is that fair for you? Do you write for yourself first? Or do you have a group of people in the world that you have in mind when you write this book?
I would say it's more the latter, Nick.
Right.
I think with the growth of me as a human being, I've learned that, and this is what, in many respects, this book's about, that the journey that each of us are privileged to walk every day, in many respects, has less to do with us and much more to do with the human beings around us and our responsibility that has been given to us to touch their hearts, minds, and souls and make their lives more enriched. I'm not sure mentally I even understood that a few years ago. There you go, you know?
Wow, you've matured.
So I think the evolution of me as a person in that I've learned so much from, again, not only CEOs, but just making the decision to open up to even my family, you know? If Gail is on the show right now, I think she'd say, yeah, the guy, he's not perfect by any stretch. He's not perfect, but he has come a long way in the last few years. It's a function of growth. And for the older people who are listening in, you know, hey, just because you're 55, 56, 60, 62 doesn't mean your life's over. Just the opposite. It is, if your mindset is one where you've got a heck of a lot more to do in your life, and you do, you do. Doesn't matter who you are, and it doesn't matter what your pursuit is. Your job's not done on the earth, period. And so I didn't understand any of that stuff. So you can see where through the writing exercise, right, and going deep, I was able to find the words that I think I couldn't find years ago. Now, it's interesting, when I speak, those words come out very naturally for me. But when I wrote, it was more mechanical.
Because of your background.
Find the bridge. I found the bridge.
Well done. It's interesting when you surround yourself with different people from different walks of life, different parts of the world, and you would have traveled as well and seen many different people and places. when the grey hairs come through and you're in your 70s, and my father's in his mid-70s now, but, yeah. You know, if I look at clients who are in their late 50s, early 60s, and they're grey-haired, and they surround themselves with people in their teens, their 20s, their 30s, their 40s, their 80s, their 90s, they surround them people with a whole different tree. They're not just going to go for the same, you're a 55-year-old, I'm only going to ever talk to you. You know, they're wise enough to expose themselves to different parts of the world. Some of the best leaders I've worked with, the reason they're great isn't because of what's in their brain or their skill set. It's because they've travelled, they've got off their bum, they've gone and seen places, they've tried new things, they've tasted new things, they've understood things, they've asked why. You know, what do we do this? Why do we do it that way? They just surround themselves with a full circle of people. And hearing how you kind of go about the purpose of writing your book and, you know, to get your message out there, that's a wonderful accolade to the story as a whole. The listeners that haven't had a chance to read the book just yet, can you try and contextualize, if that's a word, but contextualize your book to them? How would you kind of walk them through what they're about to read?
They're gonna have access, I think, Nick, to my heart and my soul, and really, I think the experiences that I've been through in the book, I think I provided more stories that people can identify with than in all my books previously combined. And it's funny, you know, when I speak, I use a lot of stories. And so that was one gap I wanted to address when I wrote this book. I said, I got to get, right? I mean, the stories are critical.
Big tick on the storytelling and the persons you sit alongside when you read the book. It's like you're sitting next to them, Steve Jobs, people. The story, yeah. Carry on, but the stories that you share with, you know, bringing their names and who they are to life through the book. I was blown. That's probably what made me turn the page. Do you know? That's probably what made me get through the page. No, I want to know what happened.
Thank you so much. You know, and I think the readers are going to really enjoy the stories. But I also share, interviews that I've done with a number of really successful people, you know, and, you know, just like you, I mean, you interview, you learn, right? And, I reflected those interviews to make this book very robust. And I think ultimately what I wanted to share were, I call them the seven secrets. But let me go through them really quick because they're not going to be secrets anymore.
No. You know? they weren't
and,
until
and
today.
I won't go into a lot of depth, but, you know, and I coach to these, And even though I thought about him back, you know, 2015, 2016, the more that I've experienced through my work these pillars or these secrets, the more I was motivated to share them with the world. And so pillar number one, how do you become the best leader and person that you can be? Non-negotiable. These are all non-negotiable. We don't have a choice. Interesting, right?
It's very interesting.
So number one is we've got to make a decision to think differently and think big. And how many people in the world don't do that? In fact, most people don't do that. And you know, as a coach, Nick, right, one of the jobs that you've got is to get your client to explode whatever comfort zone that they're in, and sometimes blow up their comfort zone so that they realize that the comfort zone that they're living in is not yielding as much pleasure as another comfort zone that you're going to discover in partnership with them, right? So that's number one. You know, the ability to have the courage to get out of your comfort zone and push the envelope. Most executives, most people just don't do that. Most people actually convince themselves that whatever zone that they're in is actually yielding incredible pleasure. Huge mistake. Number two, the ability to counterbalance thinking differently, thinking big with a heavy dose of vulnerability and humility. I really believe that vulnerability, and it is a conscious decision, that we can make. And if you don't make that decision, guess what? Too bad, you don't grow. Mm. If you do make the decision and you recognize the incredible strength and power that goes with making that decision, you discover yourself that that's the instigator to becoming the best that you can be. Now, what do I mean by being vulnerable? It's just being open to people. It's asking questions. It's going up to people and saying, hey, Nick, I need help. Mm. I need some help. I've got a challenge. I want to share this with you. It's having the courage to go deep into your soul and ask questions maybe you've never asked before. Interesting how many companies are going to be listening in and their desire for innovation, you know. I know you see that in your work. I do too. I have so many executives. How do we get more innovative? Well, the key to innovation is the decision to be vulnerable. Because if you look at a culture in an organization, if you got a senior executive team and none of those people are vulnerable, you're not going to have an innovative culture. That's number two. Number three, you got to know your gifts and you got to know your strengths. You got to be proud of your gifts and strengths. You've got to leverage your gifts and strengths. Don't ever take your gifts and strengths for granted. And how many clients in the world of coaching have told me, John, I hired you not to talk about my strengths. You hear this too, right?
Please, every day. Don't tell me what I know I already know. And it's, no, you right? Don't know what you don't know. Carry on,
yeah,
sir. Carry
exactly.
On.
And when I hear that, I say, I never say it directly like that.
I do.
But you got a weakness, right? That's a weakness. Yeah. If you can't be proud of your gifts and strengths, you should be proud of your gifts and strengths. They served you well. Mm. How many people do not know their differentiators, Nick? It's unbelievable. They don't know what's yielding and potentially can yield success for them in the future. So I think it's really important we hone in on our gifts and strengths and rely on our gifts and strengths. And likewise, we've got to address our development needs too. And that's continuous. This never ends. This is a never-ending journey, you know? And so it's interesting. People think that, you know, they arrive, you know, I've arrived and I got a promotion and I'm making a certain kind of money. You're wrong. It never, ever ends, these pillars. And every single day, you got to think differently. You got to be vulnerable every day. You got to leverage your gifts. You got to address your gaps. I think another one that's really important that I've discovered is having the courage to take action. Mm. And you know how many people will talk a good game, you know?
Lots of talkers out there.
Yeah, I make a saying about it that we got too many people thinking.
Yep, yep.
Right? We need more people to believe because belief is what instigates action. Talking's cheap. Hmm. And we got too many people running around talking. I think leadership's about doing the right things from the essence of character. Right. So having the courage to step out of your comfort zone and share your perspective with others, being assertive, being direct, listening to people, all of that requires courage. I think being vigilant as we take action, it's important that we keep our eyes open always, keep our antennae out. And be sensitive to the impact that we have on others and how often that doesn't happen. I think the ability to course correct is a big one. It's not only in our personal lives, but also as leaders in our families, the ability to always read and calibrate, read and calibrate and adjust. To me, there's a mindset out there that I've discovered. And I don't think it's a massive discovery by any stretch, but I do see it in great leaders, Nick. And this is what's called a privileged mindset, where you wake up every single day and you look around and you condition your brain authentically that what a privilege it is to be surrounded by incredible people in your life who can enrich you, right? You know, having that mindset keeps us really, really present. And how difficult it is these days to stay present, right?
True.
Everybody's thinking about the future. A lot of people get caught in the past. the question that we need to ask ourselves if we're going to yield problem-solving skills is we got to stay laser-focused in the present. And I think if our mindset's one of privilege, we're able to stay present, and we're ultimately able to help others. So those would be, I think, you know, obviously the seven pillars, very high level.
No, look, and I think that's a wonderful overview of what our readers are going to get from your book, those seven kind of pillars: think differently, think big, the vulnerability decision, having a mindset of entitlement versus a mindset of duty, leveraging your gifts and addressing the gaps, you know, having the courage to execute with pride, passion and precision, staying present, being vigilant and course correction. You know, I when I read the book the third time, we won't go into that again, but I loved the chapter on vulnerability. I can't believe you sent me a book to read. But it's hilarious. I said to Nicola, I said, the man knows me well. And has he just taken the proverbial? But she just said, no, go with it. He trusts you. But what was really interesting was I loved the chapter on, and this is something that's coming up a great deal over here in New Zealand. Now, we're a little island, 5 million people, size of Melbourne. You're seeing a greater broad breadth when you're traveling around the world, when you're sharing your story, when you're coaching people, and when you're, you know, speaking in front of people. But the chapter that really got me was the vulnerability decision, and in particular how executives, how people, they become stalled when working on this, when thinking about this. Can you share a little more to us that, in particular, the vulnerability decision, stop being stalled? How would you kind of walk through that?
Well, I think, and again, I wouldn't have said this back in 2016. I was getting there, but I'm really, really concrete on my mind now, Nick, on this. Just haven't seen it and experienced it in my coaching work all over the world. That individuals, we all have a choice to listen to others. We have a choice to ask questions, to raise our hand and admit that while we're really, really good, we may not be the best that we can be. In fact, we are not the best that we can be ever. It hit me that vulnerability also ties into a decision that each and every one of us has. And oh, by the way, it took me 58 years to actually understand it myself, which was to go deep inside, to really, really search, if you will, my soul, and ask myself questions that I've never asked before for a lot of reasons. One is kind of scary to ask the biggest questions in the world. Like, for example, what are you on the earth for, John? You know, why were you even put on this earth? That's a big question. I never asked myself that question. Here's another one. You know, how do I want my life remembered? What's my legacy? You know, those questions are very, very deep. And I've worked, and I think this is what instigated all this stuff too. You know, I'm working with senior executives, 58, 59, 60 years old, very, very successful people, right? And I get them into the exercise where I help them in partnership go deep into their soul. And then they come back to me and they say, John, it's unbelievable what I just learned about myself.
Thank you. Again.
Right? And my head goes off and I say, this is incredible. Here's a 62-year-old person I'm coaching. And all I did, I didn't do anything magical here. All I did was provide an opportunity for you to make a decision to go inside, ask yourself the big questions. You see what I'm saying? So vulnerability is multifaceted. It's very complicated, but we can simplify it by just making a decision. And actually, I've got trigger behaviors, behaviors that will ignite these seven pillars. So what can you do daily, right, to ignite positive movement in this direction? Well, one behavior is just to go to your family every single day and say, how am I doing? You know, how am I doing? You know, what am I doing well, right? And where can I improve? Now, obviously, I don't know many people who do that.
Same.
Right? But once you start to move in that direction, you start to realize, wow, I'm pushing the envelope a little bit here. I just made a conscious decision to be vulnerable. Maybe I got some feedback that I didn't really like, right? But all of a sudden, right, I start to think about, my goodness, I am pretty good, but I am not the best that I can be. So long story short, I am with you. I love all the pillars, Nick. I love all the pillars. To the readers, when they get the book, they're going to love all the pillars. But I'm with you. If you do all six pillars, but you forget vulnerability, you're done. You're not going to become the best that you can be.
And I like the way, and again, reading the book, going through the book, turning the page after page, there's exercises in there that can really help people, because you're not sitting alongside them, apart from this podcast with me. You know, I'm not sitting alongside the millions of people that maybe may get so much benefit from working with a coach or somebody or a friend or a mentor or whatever you want to call them. But, you know, doing those exercises, put pen to paper yourself when you read it, go through the exercises and take the time on each chapter just to really work things through, because, boy, you don't know what you don't know till you get to that stage, till you allow yourself to go deep. I love that point about how many of us go to our parent, our family. You know, if I went into Nicola and said, hey, love, forget how's your day been, how's Louie and Willow, I'd say, how am I doing? She'd look at me like I've... What? Have you been on that John Matone red wine again? But it's so, so true. How many of us do go and speak to the ones that really know us? You know, you've got a handful of close friends, family. You're going to get a straight answer from those that love you dearly. And
I'm with you 100%. And I'm sorry to interrupt, but you just caused me to think of something.
Good.
Listen, this is not new stuff, okay? Stephen Covey talked about this many, many years ago, okay? A legend, by the way. I thought Stephen Covey was an absolute legend. Now, he talked about this stuff differently. I would say that, you know, this vulnerability stuff's been out there. But one of the things that I've discovered through the assessment that I use, and you know the assessment in my work, there's certain igniters or traits that are inside of us.
All of us.
They're engines, right? They're engines. Mm. And if these engines are igniting in a really mature, positive way, there's a much higher probability that all the beauty on the inner core is going to spill to the outer core. That's what the world sees, right? So I won't bore all the listeners, but the thing that I've discovered in my work is that there's a particular engine that's inside of us that tends not to ignite more as much as the other engines, and it's an engine called the helper engine. It's the engine of altruism. It's the engine of heart. It's the engine of vulnerability. And when you look at leadership success, it's the lowest score in the database. We've got over 7,500 leaders who have taken that assessment. The lowest score, Nick, of the nine traits in the database, the nine engines, is this trait, this helper trait. It's not igniting. Now, it's not that leaders and human beings don't have a heart and can't be vulnerable. They can. The potential is there. We just got to get leaders. We got to get people to show more heart and be vulnerable and open up and be altruistic to others.
I think we're close. I can say from a local point of view, you've started to see people in the world, and you know, we're not going to go into politics, but Theresa May. I think she gave a speech and she's standing there being herself, which was expressing herself, being very vulnerable to herself in tears, because that's what really passionately drove her. But through her whole tenure as leading a country, she wasn't being, I don't know her, but she wasn't being that vulnerable self. As a leader, we're expected to be strong and brave and tall, and anything's possible. But Christ, I wonder how much love, I wonder how much enrichment and enjoyment those around you, those that you serve, would get from people if they just open themselves up just a tiny chapter, just a tiny bit. And I think I think in the vulnerability part of your book, if anything, just work through that and really see the exercise and see how you come through on that. Because I think that's really, really powerful from a read point of view.
I'm very touched by that, Nick. There's no question. I just want to reinforce what you said, because most, and you know this as a coach, most leaders don't look at this decision as a courageous one. They're conditioned to kind of look at it as a weak decision. Now, you can never force vulnerability, you know, at least in the work that we do. We can't force it. We've got to invite it. And I think it's the same thing when I wrote the book. I wanted to invite that discovery for the reader through the igniter behaviors, the things that they can do every single day to slowly get it. That the decision to go deep and to go to your family and to go to your team and ask for feedback, right, is not weak. It's courageous. And then what happens is they find out, my goodness, I'm enriched by what I'm learning from the people around me. I'm getting better, right? Beautiful. Isn't that beautiful? That's exactly what we want.
Yeah, it is. It's 100% what we want and why we want it and how we want it. It's so true. I wonder in my lifetime, in our lifetime, you work with execs, I work with execs. They have got so much pressure and burden on them. They've got boards, they've got shareholders, they've got investors, that whatever, let's not go there. But they're KPI to do certain things in their job. Increase, decrease, get out, whatever the stats are. I wonder if we could put a KPI of being vulnerable into their matrix of the year appraisal as a CEO, as a general manager, as a VP, as a managing director. And say to them, look, we're going to measure you, the board, the organisation, we're going to measure you on how true to yourself you're going to be. I wonder how powerful that might be in people really becoming deeply who they are and want to be, as opposed to, as you said, the helper trait when we work with our clients. And we all know how little that's kind of being shown up in our database of 7,500 people. But I wonder how interesting that would be if they started getting KPI'd and they started getting measured on that.
It's powerful.
Who knows? I don't know. We're going off topic, but yeah, but I don't know.
I'm with you. It's going to instigate positive movement for sure. But you bring up another good point, which is, you know, I don't want the listeners thinking, boy, this is soft stuff here. No. You know, no, it is not soft. In fact, you know, I kind of look at it as an algorithm. You know, it's a predictive algorithm. And we all know that in a business or a family, an entity, a team, a sports team, that if you get three things right, you're going to have success. Leadership, if leadership is optimized, right, that's a leading indicator. That will predict operating success. That will predict family success. If you've got great leadership in the family, you have a much higher probability of having a great family, right? Talent. You've got to assemble the best talent. And you've got to create a culture that sustains and supports the operating imperative of that business. So, you know, if you take a look at, you know, the stuff that I wrote about in this book, I'm really talking about really all of those elements through those seven pillars. You know, what you must do, non-negotiable, what you must do to embrace the essence of what leadership is, and ultimately your responsibility to touch hearts, minds, and souls in your life. There it is.
It's interesting you mentioned, you know, for our listeners, it's not a book of soft, it's not a soft book, and I could absolutely concretely believe in that. And I suppose that leads me on to my next point, and this may make us all laugh, but your greatest critic, your greatest love, Gail. Let's talk about this soft. What would she say? What's her view on the book, John, if you don't mind me asking a personal... She would have read it. She's part of your, you know, she's your shadow. She's at the hip with you. What? How does she view your latest book?
Well, she hasn't read the entire book. She's read parts of it.
Yep.
So I wouldn't be who I am today if it wasn't for my incredible partner. My wife of 42 years, dated in high school, Nick. We went to the junior prom together. How about that?
I love it.
Incredible, right? Now, you know, we raised four kids. I would say, listen, you know, she is a 50% partner in my business, where she's co-chairman, and she cares very, very much about all the stuff that we're talking about. So the feedback has been really, really good. So I feel really good about it. I think we're on the right course with everything.
I'm sure she said it wasn't soft. Is what I was getting at.
No, she didn't. She did not. Absolutely.
You write from the heart. You write in this book from deep. But throughout the book, you speak a great deal towards it all starts on the inside. You know, you've mentioned it so many times on this podcast today. Is that really a message you're trying to get to the readers, the readers of your book, that it all does start on the inside, and we can all put this facet up of how great life is. You know, you ask anyone on the street, "How are you doing?" "I'm great." You give me a dollar or a dime. Anyone you ask, "How are you doing?" "I'm great." But really, I want to understand a little bit more about your view on and you do it from a coaching point of view, and we do it as coaches when we work with people, but it all starts on the inside. Just talk me through a little bit more about that, could you? Because I think that's so... Because I think when you read the book, when you read a leadership book, it's all about result. It's all about an outcome. It's all about how do you get the best marketing plan? How do you deliver the best speech? How do you da-da-da-da-da? And that's a self-help guide. You know, you say this book isn't soft. It's got some great examples. It's got some great exercises that you, the reader, can go through. And it's got some great stories of people that you've sat alongside. In all that experience, just... bring that down to what you talk about. It all starts inside.
So Nick, I would say that the inner core, I call it the inner core. I also use the word soul to reflect the inner core, is very, very complex, very multifaceted. It includes things, for example, like how we view ourselves. What is your self-concept? And the degree to which your self-concept is balanced, or... do you lean more towards the egomaniac side, right? Or do you go to the other side where you don't believe in yourself? So there's no question self-concept is an instigator of ultimately what people are going to see in the outer core. Inner core drives the outer core. When you think of an outer core, right, you're looking at behaviors and skills. So if you watch a leader do their thing in the business, you're going to see behaviors associated with certain competencies, strategic thinking, critical thinking, right? There's certain behaviors, complexes of behaviors where you say, hey, that person's a great critical thinker, team lead, all of that stuff, right? Well, guess what? None of those things appear. They don't magically appear. It's all ignited from the inside, all of it. So self-concept, character, your value system. How strong, mature, and vibrant is your value system? Are you operating with the right values, and to what degree? That's an important question. What about your thinking patterns? How do you think about things? What about your emotional makeup? What about your behavioral tendencies, right? So I look at the inner core, and I've discovered, I guess, in my work that, boy, you know, the people who have really strong, mature, and vibrant inner cores. In other words, all those engines are operating in a really good way. There's a much higher probability that all the beauty on the inner core spills to the outer core. That's what the world sees. Nobody sees their inner core. Nobody does. Some people think they see your inner core, right? But they don't. Nobody has access to our inside. Nobody does. Except us. And therein lies, I think, the opportunity for each and every one of us. You know, we do that work as a coach. We help leaders go inside. This book was written to help whoever wants to pick the book up, will help them go inside privately. And they have a coach. I think that's a great way to put it. Mm. They actually have a coach with them. And that coach is going to bring them through exercises, and they're going to provide stories and examples of people who have done this before to create a vicarious experience. While they did it, I can do it, you know?
And that's one thing you've definitely brought through the book. You know, you've got those stories, you've got the storytelling, you've got the exercises, but the storytelling is somebody's who we all, there's people in there, when they read it, they'll look at them and go, oh, I would never have seen that unless I'd read it in the book, or you know, Steve Jobs, or whoever, that some of the people you share with us. I want to take a bit of a different track, and thanks for kind of walking us through the seven dimensions, the seven pillars, as you call it, for your book and a few other things. But how do you go about writing? You know, you touched on it's hard for you. What's your process? Walk me through how you put pen to paper and how the kind of the minds run through things.
Each book has been different. I'm very active on my blog as well. Mm. And by the way, that's another thing too, that, you know, when I started writing blogs a few years ago, Nick, my blogs were very much like my books, very mechanical. And I've just learned to be a lot more narrative, you know, and just use better language. And so this has been a journey. Mm. This book started with, I already knew what the seven pillars were. And I started there. And so I didn't really have the stories. I had the stories out there, but I wasn't concrete about the stories. I was more concrete about the principles that made up the seven pillars. I wanted to make sure I started there, and that's where I started. And then I filled in. I went back and filled in with the stories.
And how long did it take? How long did it take you to pull this together? You know, it's 50-odd thousand, 170-odd pages. You know, how long is it taking you to get through? Is it 61 years and still going, or where's that kind of come through?
I'll tell you what, you know, it's funny, when I wrote Cultural Transformations in 2016, I said to everybody, I think that's it.
No more. There's no more, Nick. There's nothing in the engine.
Yeah. But actually, a lot of stuff was going on at the time, even though I had verbalized that. In reality, I was growing, and that's when it really hit me. This book took me 2 years to write.
Wow.
It was 2 years.
Interesting. Interesting.
You know, And actually, I don't write very well when I travel, because I'm so focused. You know, I'm so focused on my work.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't. I've got to be very disciplined. So I usually write in my home office, which is where I am. I'm not in the office. My office is in South Florida. Mm. I spend probably 60% of my time in my home office, very private. Hmm. And so I write very, very well. So I found my place, and I focused, and that's how the book evolved from there.
What are some of the – and this is an interesting kind of point, because I've taken a great deal from the book personally, and thank you. But I'm sure many others will. But what have you learned about writing this book? What's the one thing you've actually learned when you put the last full stop on the book? You close the book up, it goes off to the publishers, they do their magic, then it gets released on the 15th of October. What's the one thing, looking back, that you've learned about writing this book?
I think the point that I brought up earlier, I'm very inspired by older people who... I'm a big sports fan, you know, and I love all sports. And I look at, for example, college basketball. I don't know if there's any college basketball fans listening in, but I look at a Mike Krzyzewski, for example, at Duke University. You know, the guy's 72 years old, okay? He's a legend. He could have given up, Nick, many, many years ago. And he had plenty of money, right? And he continues to show up every single day because he's pursuing the vision of the essence of the person, leader, human being he was put on the earth to be. So I'm inspired by that. And I was inspired as I wrote the book by, you know, many people that I interviewed, some of whom are older than me. I constantly look around for role models, always. And I say, that's incredible. There's an individual, like I work out this morning at the gym, right? There's a gentleman in the cycle class, 84 years old.
Oh,
and
excellent.
I say to myself, that is absolutely incredible. I get inspired by that. So I guess what I learned writing the book, and I guess I already knew it, you know, as I wrote the book, was, you know, something, we don't ever arrive. No. Don't ever think that you arrive at any point in your life. You know, maybe you make a lot of money, who knows, whatever. Maybe you get a promotion. And listen, we're on a journey, and the journey's really not about us. Mm. It's not about us. It is about what can I do to bring value to the world? So I'd say, you know, when I put the pen down on this one, I felt like I had the opportunity here to make a big time contribution to the world, honestly. Mm. And, you know, I wasn't overcome with, hey, guess what? What a great accomplishment, you know? Yeah, I was happy. I was happy it was over. But I still wake up every single day like I did this morning at 4 o'clock, you know? And I got things to do. So I hope that helps.
It's not, because it's funny you mentioned that. I remember what you said around, you know, you wrote your last book and you said, Gail, that's it. I remember running down the finishing chute of Ironman in New Zealand, in Taupo, New Zealand. And the clock was ticking wherever the clock was ticking. And it wasn't about the time. It was about just the whole journey of getting through, enjoying the whole day. And Nicola was standing on the finishing chute. And the big American was calling everyone in. You're an Ironman. You know, all this stuff that goes on the hoo-ha. And I found Nick in the area. And I went over to her before crossing the finishing line. I gave her a massive cuddle because she was a great rock for me training and help allowing me to go out and spend 6-7 hours on a bike or whatever. And I leant over to her and I gave her a cuddle and I said, Nick, I won't be doing another one of these. And she patted me on the back and let me cross the finishing line. And I must admit, about a week ago, I sat in my office here and I was doing some work, and I've got some pictures up, as we all have in your office. You've got pictures of family and things you're proud of, and I've got the kids and everything else that goes on in this little world. And there's one of me on the finishing line at Ironman New Zealand. I looked at it, and I haven't seen it for ages. I'm doing it now. I looked at it, I've gone, there's another one in me, John. There is another one in me, but my body's broken.
And absolutely.
I won't tell Nicola, but she will listen to this and she'll be filthy on me. But I think there's another one. But I wanted to ask, you know, you're 62 years young. You've written 9 books, 10th book. Is this your best work yet? Or have you got more to give me, more to give us? What do you think?
Well, first of all, thank you for asking me that question. I'm going to answer it really directly. This is, in my opinion, far and away my best book. Far and away. And I think the reason is that I'm showing the world my heart. It's what I do when I speak, and that's what I do when I coach, and that's what I do when I think I'm a really good human being. I show my heart. And I think I finally found the key to getting it out. And I'm anxious to share it.
It's coming out 15th of October. We're only a few months away from it, and people can pre-order it and get online. And I'll definitely put the links on at the very end of today's show. And you know, how people can go about purchasing the book and things like that, because I think that is going to be really important. And I love that. I love the way you described that, because so many times you sit and you have an itch and you think, is there more? But if you know, you're sitting there, you say that's the best work I've done so far, the best work I've done yet. It's great. It's great to be able to say that. Do you think, on that note, the book has therefore a conclusion? We read a lot of books and you read 500 pages, 200 pages, and there's an appendix and a conclusion, an overview of finish. But do you feel in your book that there is actually a conclusion to The Intelligent Leader?
No, at all. If anything, it's a starting point. You know, ultimately, I visualize that every reader will put wings, literally, not literally, mm-hmm. but figuratively, think of putting wings on you, and you will have the ability to fly. That's how I look at it. And, you know, that journey of flying is not going to be without challenges in the future. And it's not going to be without the need to fly somewhere else, right? Therefore, think differently and think big, right? It just does not end. But I think the book is going to enable people to understand the pillars better, that will enable them to better navigate their lives, ultimately become great leaders in their families, in their businesses, be tremendous role models to the people around them. And also, I think, serve to solidify their legacy, which is big. I mean, it doesn't get any bigger.
No, and I said to you before we press record button, and I said a friend of mine's a bit rubbish at the moment in health, and you then start thinking about your legacy, don't you? You start thinking about what if tomorrow doesn't come, and I don't want to go down that passage at all with you today. But you do think about it, and I think when I looked at the book when you sent it across, and I think if the memory, the front cover, has that got clouds through it? Is that all kind of is that the vision of flying? Is that how you've captured? I don't know. I'm just going off the visualization of that. Is that what you try to articulate?
Yeah, a little bit.
Interesting.
Yeah, a little bit.
Interesting. And I'll put the pictures of the book so people can see it as well. We probably answered the question, but you mentioned a great deal in the book and we talked about it, but remember the past is over. So what's next for you, and where do we go now? You and I have got a great journey. We're on a very purposeful thing. But what's next for you?
Well, thankfully, and I'm very humbled by this, Jarmatone Global continues to grow. And again, I'm surrounded by young people. Here I am, 62. My team is very, very young. I got my number two son, Nick is 34. And Matthew, who's 27, so I've got two of my sons in the business, and two of their best friends are in the business. So I've got two 34-year-olds, and I got two 27-year-olds.
That's why you work from your office at home, John, not because you want to be in the office with the boys, isn't it, and the guys?
There you go. I don't want to be with them. But actually, it's so much fun when we are together.
Yeah.
They keep me young. I love the point that you made earlier. I'm surrounded by millennials who think differently than I do. They help me. In many, many respects, you know, see the world differently. I'm enriched by their energy and their passion, their vision. They're just starting out in life, you know. And so, listen, Nick, the company continues to grow. I don't want it to get too big, though. I really don't. I want to continue to stay very core to coaching. I love to do the coaching that I do all over the world. We are also growing to the point where our company is getting coaching projects, and we want to deploy our best coaches on those projects. People like you, Nick, who clearly is one of our best coaches, certainly in the top five for sure globally.
Thank you.
And I want to continue speaking about 25 times a year. I do about 20 speeches a year. I'd like to get about 20 to 25 globally. I love to do retreats, 4-day retreats with executives. I love that. So really, honestly, I don't have any grand vision other than just keep doing what I'm doing. And as long as I stay healthy and I can keep doing what I'm doing, surrounded by incredible people, I'm blessed.
I want to finish on a note. And I know you and I didn't speak about what I wanted to kind of bring to the podcast today, and there was no predetermined route other than just to talk with you and I about this wonderful book and the gift you're sharing with so many around the world. But I did ask you if it was okay if you would pick up the book, and I highlighted a few bits that I thought would be really nice if you wouldn't mind reading out. as we end up today. And I just thought that, you know, sometimes, you know, I listen to a lot of audio books because of the way I enjoy. And sometimes when you get the author to actually read something and you hear the author say what they're going to say, it really is powerful and it really means a great deal rather than me blurbing through some words. So would you mind, before we finish up, just reading a little bit from the book? Is that going to be all right?
Nick, it would be amazing. And so I'm gonna read a couple paragraphs.
Perfect. Perfect.
And here we go. Intelligent leaders understand strength to be something more than the volume of their voice or the breadth of their power. They know that true strength is exhibited when they are willing to take the risk of being vulnerable with themselves and with others. Their openness surprises those around them, and it inspires others to follow their lead. They know that opening up is the gateway to transformation and the currency of strong and lasting relationships. They never lose sight of the fact that they can never achieve anything without the trust and partnership of others. Intelligent leaders are those who hold the biggest possible context. They have cultivated an ability to transcend their own selfish tendencies by caring more about the many greater wholes of which they are a part. This gives them a rare kind of maturity and dignity. They feel an obligation to the mission, to their team members, and doing their absolute best in every situation or circumstance. The breadth of their perspective creates space and confidence for others. People can take solace in the fact that they are involved because they trust always to make choices that benefit the most people.
And there we go. Great work. Well done. Congratulations on all your success so far on getting this book out and bringing it from the depth of your heart. And it means a great deal. Look, you've got one book sold, John, from myself. So, you know, you've done a wonderful job. It's going to go down so well. It's going to really last the test of time. And it's going to be used by generations, I can tell, be it through universities, through schools, through colleges, whatever, through leadership, whatever. I'm thrilled with it. And thank you for taking some time out of your day and your busy schedule to talk with me on the podcast about what it is you're doing. And as I said, you know, thank you for reading that. But the book's going to be released October the 15th. You can buy it through Amazon and Barnes and Noble. I'll make sure the links are up on my show notes. And I know there's a big marketing campaign that Nick and Matthew and Trevor are going to go out and you know, keep promoting what John's been doing. So there you go. Jump online, purchase, enjoy, share the book, the Intelligent Leader book, and start taking that step forwards to leaving your own legacy. So thanks so much, John.
Thank you, Nick.
I appreciate your time as always, and I'm going to press stop and stop and record, and we'll carry on talking. But thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Nick. Thank you.